I'm glad you've chosen to join me for another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's Word. Let's open our Bibles to Ecclesiastes chapter 2, where we're going to start at verse 12. Real quick, I want to remind you that I don't believe that Solomon is the author of this book. I am convinced that the author is King Hezekiah, and that he is writing this as an after-action report of his response to his life crisis. That when he realized that he only got an extra 15 more years of life beyond that day that he was told he was going to die, that he began to think, well, what's the purpose of life? What is it that can make sense of the fact that we're all facing death? And so he experiments with wisdom, doesn't get good answers. He experiments with trying to make himself happy with stuff, doesn't change the equation a bit. It's all still a puff of breath. It's vanity. It's like trying to control wind. It can't be done. So let's see what he does next in this story. Ecclesiastes 2, verse 12. So I turned to consider wisdom and madness and folly. Now, he already mentioned that he was doing this. Wisdom is on one end of the spectrum. Madness and folly, they're on the opposite side. Wisdom is all about using information appropriately, according to God's standard. Madness and folly is foolishness. It's going against God's standard, going against God's design, just doing whatever you feel like. And so he's been trying to see all along this spectrum what makes sense in dealing with life and the inevitability of death. So he's back to that again. For what can the man do who comes after the king? Only what's already been done. So here he is king at Jerusalem over Israel, over Judah. And so he is now thinking, I've only got so much of my life left. Who's going to be king after me? What are they going to do with all the stuff I've done? Verse 13, then I saw that there is more gain in wisdom than in folly, as there is more gain in light than in darkness. Now, this is the beginning, I think, of his several conclusions of the matter passages. That this is all written down after he's been through the whole process of grappling with the inevitability of death ending life and having to stand before God and give an accounting for what you did with it. And so with that in mind, that ultimate conclusion, he says, so I know that it is better to be wise. Remember, the fear of he who is the beginning of wisdom. It's the beginning of knowledge. So I now understand it is better to be wise with God than to be foolish against him. Just as much as it's better to be in the light than to be in the darkness. And of course, we know that light and darkness metaphorically stand for goodness and evil. Verse 14. The wise person, the person who fears God, has wisdom, right? The wise person has his eyes in his head, which was kind of a euphemism, I think, at that time for he's got his eyes open. That's our way of saying it. He's paying attention. So the wise person has his eyes in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. The fool is not walking in the light. He's walking in the darkness. And of course, that's going to end up with stumbling. Yet I perceive that the same event happens to all of them. Now, this is where he gets back to the problem. He says, wise person, better to be them because they're paying attention to what's going on. Foolish people, not so much. They're walking in darkness. But the reality is, the wise person, the foolish person, both of them are going to die. It doesn't matter in the end. Both of them will be dead. Then I said in my heart, remember the heart is the place where thinking takes place in Jewish language. So I said in my heart, what happens to the fool is going to happen to me also. So he clearly considers himself to be a wise man. Why then I have been so very wise? So now he's frustrated. He's frustrated with the idea that wisdom doesn't fix the problem. The problem is I'm going to die. And there's not thing one I can do about it. So why am I being so smart? Why am I being so wise? And I said in my heart that this also is vanity. It's a puff of breath. For of the wise as of the fool, there's no enduring remembrance, seeing that it is in the days to come all will have been long forgotten. Now, it is true that we do remember a lot of historical people. Now, when we say a lot, that is from our perspective. In reality, we don't really know an awful lot of historical people. I mean, there have been billions of people that have lived on planet Earth. And yet, I am guessing that most of us could only name a few thousand of them if we were pressed for it. And then we would be able to tell you even less about each one of them. Because you see, once you're dead, over time, you and what you did get forgotten. I, from time to time, have asked people, hey, do you know who so-and-so is? And I usually pick a name that I've seen on a memorial plaque somewhere in the area. Like when you're driving the bypass, there are bridges that are named after usually deceased police officers, patrol officers, in their honor. Others are related to like governors or senators or something like that. And I'll ask a name. Do you know who this person is? And they'll go, no, I don't. And the reality is those people have only been dead sometimes for a few decades, maybe less than a century, maybe a little over a century, and yet now they've been forgotten by people. Go into a cemetery of your hometown. I've done this. I've wandered around cemeteries where I know my own relatives are buried, and I've looked at the tombstones, and I don't know these people. At one time, several of them were very prominent in my home county. But I don't know who they are. That's what he's getting to. It doesn't matter if you're wise or you're foolish. Eventually, people are going to forget about you. And even if they know your name, they're not going to really know you well. I can't tell you how many times I get frustrated watching television historical dramas that I've researched the historical character. And they're putting things up there that are nonsense, that have nothing to do with that person, that they would never engage in that behavior. And yet people are sucking it up as if that's the reality of that person's life when it's not. They have been forgotten for who they really are. Verse 16 again. For of the wise as of the fool, there is no enduring remembrance, seeing that in the days to come, all will have been long forgotten. How the wise dies just like the fool. So I hated life because of what is done under the sun was grievous to me, for all is vanity and striving after wind. So he's mad. And I can't blame him, really. He hates the fact that he has no ultimate control over life. Everything we do, day after day, you know, under the sun, it is eventually going to end in death, and over time, in us being forgotten. And we have no control over it. All is a puff of breath and striving after wind. Now, don't get despondent, all right? I have to remind you from time to time, the point of this book is not to get depressed that life is meaningless. That is definitely not its intention. The intention of this book is realize we're all in the same boat because of sin and the curse. We all face death, and we only have so much time on planet Earth. And God has given that time to us as a gift to use. And we need to use it for Him. We need to make the most of that time, because one of these days we'll tell Him how we use the gift. We will give an accounting for it. So don't be like some people that just waste it and misuse it and abuse it. Use it for God. Back to the verse 18. I hated all my toil in which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me, and who knows whether he will be wise or a fool. So now he gets frustrated with the fact that I went to all this effort to collect wisdom literature. I went to all this effort to make my country prosperous and have all of these animals and these parks and these palaces and these reservoirs. And I've tried to do all this good for people and for myself and to be happy. And I'm going to die. And somebody else is going to have control of this. And I don't know whether that somebody is a smart person or a foolish person. Somebody that's going to be mindful of what God would want, or somebody that's only about themselves. Now, he's talking about his own kids here. Yet he will be master of all for which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. And this also is a puff of breath. It is vanity. You know, every once in a while, I see this bumper sticker. Usually it's on RVs. I'm out spending my kids, sometimes it says grandkids' inheritance. And I have to smile because I've been thinking about this passage right here. That, you know, some people are like, why should I leave a bunch of stuff for my kids and grandkids when I don't even know if they're going to use it well? I might as well use it for myself. I might as well make the most of it myself. And so I can kind of understand a little bit of that. All right, let's get back to the text again. So, verse 20, I turned about and gave my heart up to despair over all the toil of my labors under the sun. So, again, this is a journal of a life crisis. It's written after he's gone through the whole thing. But he lets us know this is where he hit rock bottom, is when he realized, I went to all of this effort to try to bring happiness in my own life and in the lives of the people around me. But as I approach death, which is inescapable, I realized that the person coming after me may in fact waste it all. And it really bummed me out. All right? So I started just being in a deep blue funk, right? So I turned about and gave my heart up to despair over all the toil of my labors under the sun, because sometimes a person who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who didn't toil for it, and this also is vanity and a great evil. So he's really at the bottom at this point in his story. What has a man from all the toil and striving heart with which he toils beneath the sun. For all his days are full of sorrow, and his work is a vexation. You know, it's frustrating. Even in the night, his heart does not rest. This is also vanity. Now, this is where we need to speak to the workaholics amongst us, right? That they work hard. They put in long hours. They don't take time off. They don't take vacations. When they're at home, they're not thinking about home stuff. They're thinking about their jobs. They're wrestling with the problems that are getting in their way for their work. And Hezekiah, I think, says, this is all just a puff of breath. It's just a puff of air. It's not getting us anywhere. And then he gives another conclusion for us. He pops these in from time to time, I think, to really help us not to get into the depths of despair that he was in at this point in the story. Listen to verse 24. This is where we need to finish, really, in our heads, every time we open up this book. There is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God, for apart from him, who can eat and who can have enjoyment? So, the collector, Koheleth in the Hebrew, King Hezekiah, I think, in reality, he says, listen up. All of us have to work. All of us have to live in this cursed world where each day we have to do stuff in order to put food on the table and a roof over our head and clothes on our backs. That's just part of our life. And we know that we're going to get older and older, and eventually we're going to die. That's the reality. Well, guess what? Along the way, we should enjoy what we're eating, enjoy what we're drinking, and have a little time to enjoy life in this world. You know, it's the modern day adage of take time to stop and smell the roses, right? Because this is from God. It's a gift from God. He gave us this world in its perfect form at first to spend eternity in. But he got screwed up because of sin, and he didn't just wipe the slate of us all. He didn't just erase everything. He went ahead and let everything play out. So he lets each of us come into existence and live. And along the way, he allows us to make the most of it. And so we should. Verse 26. For to the one who pleases him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. That's the reality here. For those of us that acknowledge that God is the creator, that God is the giver of all good gifts from above, he's given us the wisdom and the knowledge and the joy that can be in this brief life of ours. But to the sinner, you know, the foolish person, the rejecter of God's authority, he is given the business of gathering and collecting only to be given to one who pleases God. Now, this gets into something we saw in the Proverbs as a rule of thumb, especially in the times where things are being done in Israel in accordance with God's way of doing things. You know, as long as they were doing things God's way, they were to be blessed. They were to be head, not the tail. And so the Proverbs said that basically in those time periods that the bad people would end up giving up their hard work to the good people. And so Koheleth, King Hezekiah, makes that point. He says, God is going to give good things, reasonable things to be enjoyed by people that seek him out in their life. But the people that are fighting him, refusing to live by his standard, on many occasions, he will take that stuff away from them that they have gotten because they're not using it properly or they're not thankful for it. And those things will go to the people that will enjoy it better. Now, that's not always the case, but sometimes it is. And Koheleth says, this also is vanity and striving after wind. This also is a puff of breath. It's like trying to grab a hold of wind and hold on to it and make it obey your will. It's just not going to happen. It's outside of our control. And so we just need to make the most of it every day, every moment. Which brings us then to something that was originally written probably right around the late 700s BC, but most of us know the words here because of something that was sung in the 1960s and afterward. It became popularized by the Byrds on the song Turn, 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 and it made it to number one. I don't remember how long it was spent there. I was born in 1960, so I was a kid when it first came out, but it was still popular when I was a teenager. And so here it comes from the Word of God itself. Ecclesiastes 3:1. For everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. So what we're going to see here is the opposites, the extremes on every circumstance of life. There is a time to be born. Yes, there is. And then there is a time to die. In this world, because of the curse, that is true. Birth will be inevitably followed by death. A time to plant, you know, we very often will do that in the springtime for our vegetable gardens or our flower gardens. And then there's a time to pluck up what is planted, you know, a time to harvest effectively, if it's vegetable or if it's a flower and it's done, then you got to pull it up to make room for next spring where you're going to put the flowers in. Verse 3. There is a time to kill and a time to heal. You know, warfare sometimes brings us with that horrible situation of having to kill someone to save someone else, to protect someone or a situation. But then there's a time you got to jump in and help somebody out. Weirdly enough, you know, sometimes police officers will shoot someone and immediately render first aid to them, right? That's the weirdness of living in this life. There's a time to break down and a time to build up, you know, to deconstruct and to construct. There's a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance. Yeah, there's a time to be unhappy at a funeral, be sad and cry a lot, grieve. But then there is a time, like at weddings, that you party. Graduations, you party, you have happy times. Verse 5, there is a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together. You know, you're getting stones out of your field before you put your crop in, and you're throwing those stones away. But there are other times you're wanting to build a wall and you're pulling the stones together. There is a time to embrace, you know, give somebody a hug, and then there is a time to refrain from embracing, you know, because there's something not right with the relationship. There's a time to seek, and then there's a time to lose, meaning to give up. Give up as lost. There's a time to keep, and then there's a time to cast away. There's a lot of us that have a problem with this one, you know, where we look at the thing that's been around for a while, it's in bad repair, and it's like, man, but I don't want to give it up yet. Well, sometimes you have to give it up. There is a time to tear. I always like to think of this as tear it up and use it as a rag, because I think we got clothing in mind here. And then there's a time to sew. Fix it. There's still some life in it. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. You know, sometimes we need to keep our opinion to ourselves, and other times the person needs to know what the truth is. We got to speak it to them in love. A time to love, be committed to, and a time to hate. And I want to emphasize again, the word for love is about commitment. And therefore, its opposite, the word for hate, is about non-commitment. And so there is a time that we need to be committed to people, and there is a time when we need to realize those people are not good in our circumstances and situations, and we can't have anything to do with them. We got to cut them off. Now, hopefully, you know, tough love might be able to fix the problem. But that is what it's got in mind here. And then the whole reason that this was grabbed in the 1960s, a time for war and a time for peace. It was the time of the Vietnam War, and there were a lot of people trying to express the need to seek a resolution to that. And so, yes, it is true. Sometimes we have to go to war. But the goal should always be, when we go to war, to use the least amount of force necessary to come to a resolution of peace. And that's where I'm going to leave you until the next time we can get into the Word.